Hello and welcome to Nova. I'm Bernard Clark, and this evening we're live in the Radio Centre here in Dublin for the world premiere of Pauline Oliveris's The Mystery Beyond Matter, a commission for John Godfrey's Quiet Music Ensemble. John and the ensemble are here and will be performing the work in about 30 minutes or so. In that time, let's try and listen to a couple of aspects of Oliveros, one of the greatest and most provocative figures in contemporary music. Just a bit of background. She studied composition and accordion at the University of Houston in Texas. She went on to study composition with Robert Erickson. She moved to the San Francisco area from around 1961 to 1965. She worked as co-director and then director of the legendary Tape Music Center. In 1967, she moved on and taught in the Department of Music at the University of California in San Diego. She resigned from the university in 1981. She went on to pursue an independent career as a composer, performer, and teacher. And since 1985, she's been the artistic director of the Pauline Oliveris Foundation, which is now the Deep Listening Institute. Hers is a vast output. I mean vast. It includes works for chamber ensemble, chorus, electronic pieces, various accordion works, as well as improvisational and multimedia works. She's also a tireless campaigner for women's rights, and she's a great lady to talk to. Caught up with her earlier in the week, and not only is she one of the most interesting people you'll talk to, she's also one of the most funny and infectious and unpretentious people. And given the enormity of what she presents us with, you're flabbergasted very quickly when you talk to Pauline Oliveris. But she's such a fantastic lady, you're fooled into thinking that you're her equal for a couple of seconds. You're not. Anyway, we caught up with her to talk about The Mystery Beyond Matter, the piece this evening, and one piece of hers that you might recognise, I think people here in the studio will recognise, is from the great Deep Listening album from 1988 and 1989, and that's a piece called Chinese Word Suoren. I've played it on Nova, as we say, and I think it's been played on Lyric on the Blue of the Night. It's worth having a listen to because it definitely has been an inspiration for this new composition. So here's just a taste of Suoren.
Thank you.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that's just a taste of Suran. And I notice here in the studio, most people have their eyes closed. And I fully agree with you, because that kind of music, just you either engage with it or you don't. And if you don't, you're gone. And if you engage with it, you're also gone. The notion of sound as something that reaches for its listener. Sound dissolving the functions of the composer, the listener, the performer. That's most evident in that piece, in Suren, from Deep Listening, from the release in 1989. And just to fill you in on it, in case people who don't know about it, it was Oliveros, along with trombonist and longtime friend Stuart Dempster, a singer called Panayotis. They went to a place called Fort Warden, north of Seattle, Washington, in America, to a disused, buried 2 million gallon water tank, which was 186 feet in diameter, with a 45 second, which is extraordinary, reverberation time. And the music, trombone on the album, didgeridoo, accordion, conch shells, voice, and pieces of metal, is extraordinarily beautiful and very, very haunting. Suren sees the performers transformed, in my opinion, into almost disembodied presences. It's as if, and I don't mean to sound so silly, but it's as if it's voices from another reality, because you're certainly lifted out of this one. And this use of huge reverberations on the Deep Listening album is going to be very evident in the performance with the Quiet Music Ensemble in the premiere of The Mystery Beyond Matter, which is coming up in about 20 minutes or so. I was here for the sound check earlier on, and the hairs were standing on the back of my neck, and I promise you, so will yours. We caught up with Pauline, as we said earlier in the week, and one of our questions to her, and this fantastic lady, was to ask her if this new work, The Mystery Beyond Matter, is a kind of outgrowth from what she achieved on the Deep Listening album. So here's our phone call to Pauline.
Oh, yes, definitely. That experience in the cistern with the 45-second reverberation time, certainly changed the way that we were thinking and playing and wanting to express on stage. But you can't take the cistern with you.
No, of course.
At the time, 25 years ago, no, but today, yes. It's possible to do a simulation of that space. The thing about the cistern is that there was the most smooth reverberation that we had ever experienced, but you can change those characteristics when you have a simulation.
The sound on the album is in the cistern. It's absolutely hypnotic. A note from Panayotis, read in part on the new Albion release, he writes, "It was impossible to tell where the performer stopped and the reverberation took over." And I'm just wondering, is that also a pursuit in The Mystery Beyond Matter, whereby you'll have these acoustics fired, if you like, or, you know, simulated, and so therefore, it as the piece develops or progresses, it'll be impossible to tell who is the Quiet Music Ensemble and what is the piece. Is that the aim?
That sounds like it might happen. Indeed, yes.
but I'm wondering, Pauline, are these acoustics then not only arenas, if you like, for the musicians, cisterns for the musicians, are they, and also possibly musical cues, are they, in a sense, players themselves within the ensemble?
Oh, yes. I mean, that's the way we thought about the cistern in the Deep Listening recording, that we were not only performing what we did, we were improvising, but we were listening to each other, and we were also listening to the cistern as it was playing back to us. It was a performance. The space became a part of the music, for sure.
But one of the things that hit me in thinking about talking to yourself and listening to the Deep Listening album again recently was that, I'm just wondering now, Pauline, and forgive me if I'm getting all highfalutin, as we'd say here, but are you making sound answerless? Like, is it a case of music in the Jungian sense of swallowing, its own tail, swallowing its own root notes, so to speak, that we're hearing absences ringing out there in the ether?
Well, we seem to be existing in a torus, So maybe that's the Ouroboros that Jung was talking about.
And that's Pauline Oliveros on the phone to me earlier from the New York area earlier in the week. During the 1960s, in the musically thriving San Francisco area, Pauline Oliveros was in the thick of a pure electronic phase, using natural sounds and raw test signals as pretty much as fodder for processing systems of her own design, which could be played almost like instruments. So this has been going on a long time in Oliveros, in a sense. And this really distinguished her from her contemporaries, which some of them were, like, you think of Stockhausen, marvellous, magnificent cutter and splicer in some ways. Oliveros is into something completely different already, if you know what I mean. And at the Tape Music Centre at Mills College in Oakland, she recorded a piece called Alien Bug. This is in 1967. And it's created for the centre and her own tape delay system. And it was inspired by the frog pond outside the studio. And on Alien Bug, which we're going to hear a little bit of now, you'll hear high-toned, insect-like pulses and language mixed with more low frequencies, metallic vibrations, I think, rhythmic, soft, percussive pulses for definite. And as the piece progresses, the tension increases. It's about 30-something minutes long. And it's as if there's something animalistic in the music. The evolutions of these different sound layers as they keep coming at us over the whole cycle of the piece. It's as if there's a creature, and I'm not exaggerating, it's as if there's a creature in the rhythmic high tones, insect-like, and it definitely strikes me as a creation of an environment. I don't know how, but that's what I'd like to know what you think afterwards. but here's the opening. So I think you can get an impression there. Okay, we can hear this is 1960s technology. Listen through that and you're listening to something completely different already, especially in the context of what was happening in tape music, electronic music, if you like, at the time. Her love of sound technology, especially recording and mixing sound, this is connected to her mother, who gave her a Sears Roebuck wire recorder as a present in 1947 and a Silvertone magnetic tape recorder in 1953. And I think these were extremely significant gifts for Pauline Oliveros. And I wonder if they are the source for her later sonic experiments with technology, number one, but particularly for her skewering of the often warped politics of music and her championing of the feminist cause in particular. And the reason I say that is because all of that comes into play on Bye Bye Butterfly, which is an 8-minute masterpiece, a real-time improvised performance that enacts a very eerie and, in my opinion, very forceful feminist critique of the opera. It's for a two-channel tape. It uses two oscillators, two line amplifiers in cascade, two tape recorders in a delay setup, a turntable, and a recording of Puccini's great opera, Madama Butterfly. And what begins with a pronounced click on this recording and a very high-pitched whistle soon turns into a really riveting, ghostly meditation on the whole idea of woman as sounds ricochet and travel towards the treble. In this piece, Butterfly enters, and the electronic sounds then that accompanying Butterfly after that moment are just like thunderous echoes. It's absolutely incredible music. So just a taste to give you an idea what to expect. And there she comes, our butterfly. Sorry we have to fade out there, but that heightened awareness, I think we all get the picture of electronic sampling long before sampling became a term, certainly in its infancy. Colliding musics, which come later in the piece, all sounds really, that heightened awareness, that's really central to everything Oliveras does. One day in 1958, she put a microphone in her window and she recorded the sound environment until the tape ran off the wheel. And when she replayed the tape, she realised that although she'd been listening carefully while she recorded, she hadn't actually heard all the sounds that were on the tape. So she discovered for the first time how selectively she listened and that the microphone discriminated much differently than she did. And from that moment, she determined that she must expand her awareness of the entire sound field. And she wrote later, "I gave myself the seemingly impossible task of listening to everything all the time. Through this exercise, I began to hear the sound environment as a grand composition. The rhythms and relationships that occurred began to enter my work consciously. To this day, I continue to remind myself of the task of listening to everything all the time, when I find that I have not been doing it, because in not doing it, I am causing gaps in the grand composition." Now, I think we could spend the rest of this program talk just musing on listening and the grand composition, but we can't. Sorry. But it's that approach which is of the essence in Oliveras. If you turn to a work like Sound Patterns, you'll quickly discover that it's devoid of a lot of specific pitches. There are a few, but there's less than more. Instead, it's very carefully notated series of shh, clicks, pops and other noises. And it's for chorus, or some versions are for chorus, and some are voiced, some are whispered and some are unpitched. And our musical culture here in the wonderful West, which tends to think of music as tones that can be organised into harmonies, is absolutely defeated here. In the Oliveras palette, a little bit like John Cage, all sounds are welcome. So here's a taste of Sound Patterns.
So A Taste of Sound Patterns, which is as close as Oliveros gets to her contemporaries in some ways. I know you might be thinking Berio Ligeti. Yeah, maybe, but also Oliveros. And definitely, as much as I love Ligeti and Berio, they didn't do it like that. Anyway, that doesn't matter. Because now we come to the world premiere, which was commissioned by the Quiet Music Ensemble with funds made available by the Arts Council of Ireland, who not only funded the commission, also funded the performance and supported the ensemble enormously. The Mystery Beyond Matter is for improvising musicians. This much we can say about this piece. And sound engineer, live electronics, multi-channel audio, unusual venues, as I think we've kind of got a taste of, including the one we're standing in, the radio, and one we're going over as well, the internet. Given the very specific demands the piece makes of the musicians, we forget about them. I asked Pauline in that phone call if she had to, you know, re-familiarise herself with the Quiet Music Ensemble, whom she'd met in Cork in 2008. So here's what Pauline had to say.
No, no, I think I understood their kind of philosophy, and I like the idea of the Quiet Music Ensemble. And so it was, you know, very, very smooth to begin the work on it. I didn't have to interview anybody, really.
And if I may ask you, you're a master. So how does a master sit down? I mean, it's the same blank page or blank computer screen, I know, but how do you approach writing a new piece? I mean, do you literally finger a few notes on a piano, or do you write in total silence, or do you take down the accordion? Or
well, this piece is more conceptual, so. I mean, the players have instructions, and also the Max Patch is an integral part of the piece, with the simulations, the different reverberations, but also there is what I call a solo space, where each player will have its own solo space. But that space is modulated or not by the Max Patch. So what the player plays may be transformed during the playing of it. And there's choice. The player can choose to be in a solo space, or it can be in a reverberation space, this drone space, I call it. Because the piece has what is called a drone, that is continual throughout the whole time, and it's in a reverberation space usually, but that can change as well. So it's up to the players to keep the drone going, and this drone can be pitch, or it can be non-pitch or noise-like sounds, but it's continuing. The solo space is the player playing over the drone. So that's the kind of the idea of the piece.
So, Pauline, what is the mystery beyond matter? Is it divine? Is it scientific? Is it eternal? Or is it mortal?
Well, maybe it's all of those or nothing. I chose the title because the Quiet Music Ensemble, the way they like to play, and the fact that they like to play very long pieces. So I decided to make a piece that had no beginning and no end.